asked, why are depressions hitting New Zealand more or less always called complex, whereas in the North American Canada area, they are not? Here's David. Hope they don't go to sleep.
And also, what causes them, which is part and parcel of this. So, part of this is going to be a little technical, and I'm doing it on purpose. So, first of all, we'll just start off and simply say that we all know that depressions or lows, whatever you want to call them, they come in many shapes, for sure, and sizes. Some are small, some are big. They all travel at a variety of speeds. And they develop at different rates, and of course their development, the degree of development determines how fast they're going. So when they're just starting to develop, they're quite fast, and when they become mature, they slow down as well. Now, some of them are only hooks at the polar end of the cold front itself. You can see that many, many times when you look at a synoptic chart. There's a line, a curved line with your triangles, but you don't see any closed isobars. Well, that happens quite frequently here as well. Now, most of these types of lows are found embedded in what we call belts of strong westerly winds, and they usually form south of 40. Not always, but usually. Now, of course, the closest of the isobars, and you all know this by now, indicate how strong the winds are going to be. Very close means that the winds are quite strong. Now, the lows often move easterly, and they get up to 30 to 40 knots, as if they were just passengers in the overall flow, that overall westerly flow. Now, some of the depressions are quite large in area, and they contain multiple centers. Now, these are what the topic is today. These are referred to as complex lows or complex depressions. Now, sometimes within this system, if you will, the individual centers themselves are going to rotate around a common low, and often one of the centers, though, is going to move away to the east. That leaves the other centers, of course, behind, and what happens then, they tend to fill, and they tend to weaken. And that just leaves one, and then eventually that gets absorbed as well. So what causes a complex low? So usually, probably 95% of the time, we find a series of very small short waves at 500 millibar. Here we are again now talking about 500 millibar. Now each of these short waves have their own vorticity centers. Now to the right of each, what we call vort max, vorticity max. And by the way, if you're looking at a good upper level chart, that's seen as an X on your 500 millibar chart. So look at a good one carefully, and you'll see the trough, you'll find the axis, and you'll see a little X there. Well, that area to the right of that X is an area of divergence. Now, this creates convergence at the surface. So we've got divergence up on top and convergence at the surface. And that's where a new low center forms. These short waves, well, we call them weather makers. And you can see why. And they are spawned by variations in the jet stream. So the silly question wondered why they weren't found elsewhere in the world. But in fact, they are. They're very much found everywhere. In the U.S., as an example, common areas are off the California-Oregon coast. The other very common area to see them are the Carolinas on the East Coast. Now, the rest of the world has them as well. I'm going to go on and explain a little bit more about them, and then we'll get back to this. Now, the fronts extend from each of these low centers, and they're picked up by satellite imagery. So this is how the Met services are finding these. So they're looking at satellite imagery, they're looking at the cloud, they're looking at loops, so what is happening it becomes quite evident they're looking very carefully. And the other, and probably more important one, is the data that's obtained from the satellites and also the balloon launches that take place. Now, obviously out in the mid-ocean, the only balloon launches are from ships, so we're relying on the satellites to give us the temperature data that we need. So what we're looking for, and here's where I'm going to get a little technical, we're looking for concentrations of theta E lines, theta, T-H-E-T-A, theta E. Now, they are represented as nearly parallel lines on a good 700 or 850 millibar chart. And when the lines are concentrated, that's where the forecaster draws the front. And so how is this done? Well, they simply get the data. They're looking at what's called a tephogram. And this is simply a diagram of the temperature throughout altitude. And it has a multitude of other lines which indicate adiabats, which we won't get into. That could be another topic. What's a tephogram? Most of you don't care, and probably never will see one. But anyway, you locate the 850 level, you spot the temperature at that level, you find the closest, what we call dry adiabat line, and that point is called theta E. So that's measured in degrees Kelvin. So Kelvin simply is centigrade, and you add 273 to that, and that's the temperature in Kelvin. Then these values are plugged into the computers at the Met Service, and these lines are drawn. Now, finding theta E is actually pretty basic. I've done it many, many times, and it's really a piece of cake. But to find the theta E concentrations on a chart is not so easy, because sometimes they're not as concentrated as you might think. But when they're very close together, and it's obvious, there's no question that that is a front, and therefore it's associated with a low, and therefore if there's more than one, we have a complex depression. Now, New Zealand Met Service, they are very particular and they're very precise. I had the good luck of spending 6 months taking their forecasters course down there that they give to new employees. It's a long story how that all happened, but anyway, I found out pretty quick that that's their MO. They are going to be as precise as possible. So they are going to draw these synoptic charts the best that they can. Now, hang on. Starting to lose my voice. So anyway, they absolutely insist on finding these secondary lows and associated fronts. Now, if you were to look at the same area on a chart drawn by somebody else, say the Aussies, BOM, or maybe Fiji Met Service, or even NOAA, if they're drawing a chart for this area, you probably will not find a complex depression. They seem content to isolate the primary depression, and they just leave it at that. Because, let's face it, in the end, that's what's left anyhow. After the small depressions either get absorbed or they move off, that's all you're going to have left anyway. So that's probably why it appears that only here in New Zealand do we find the complex low. But now you simply know that that's not so. They are everywhere. But it's just that Met Services decide that enough is enough. They're going to draw in the primary low, the primary front, and leave it at that. So I hope that answers the silly question. It's not silly. It's a damn good one. And it's a very complex issue. And now, one thing I'm going to mention. I would say that I've mentioned that, well, they're found everywhere around the world, and so they are. But they do seem to be a little bit more prevalent in this area. And the reason that may be the case is because of Australia. And that's not being funny. Because what happens, Australia has a series of ranges on the East Coast. I think the Aussies may call them mountains here in New Zealand. We think we probably call them, what do you call them?
Hillocks.
Hillocks. Fiddles. Yes. Oh, is that nasty, hillocks? No, I don't think she needs that. Well, what happens is the jet stream and all of the upper levels, the jet stream, remember, is running between 200 and maybe 300 millibar in altitude. And remember also that all these levels of air are connected in the sense that air is a fluid. So it's not like we just have separate little flows. It's all one big flow, but some areas are going faster than others. Anyhow, they're going to hit this hill or this mountain. And when that happens, it's going to cause the air, all the levels to lift, physically lift. And once this air passes the hill or mountain, it drops back down where it was before. And when it does that, it, here in the southern hemisphere and here in the Australian area, it's going to turn left. And when it turns left, well, because the Earth is spinning in the direction that it's going, the Earth says, well, we don't really like this happening, all this air turning left. We're going to make a correction, and we're going to make a turn right. But what happens, it's sort of like a pendulum on a clock. The air turns left, then it has to go right to make a correction. Well, maybe it went too far, so it goes left again. Well, maybe a little bit too far, and it goes right again. So now what we've done is we've developed the ridges and the troughs that I talk about every day at 500 millibar. And so within these troughs, we have some areas of stronger winds than others. And these little areas of stronger winds have areas of spin or vorticity. And therefore, they are the items that are making these little tiny lows down on the surface. And that's what makes the complex lows. It's all these little, if you will, areas of vortex at 500 millibar, just clumps of them, all within this trough. So I hope you understood that, but that's really what happens, and that's why it happens, and that's why it's fairly commonplace here in the Southwest Pacific. So any questions or comments, come now, and keep the silly questions coming. And here's Trish. And we'll find out if y'all fell asleep.
Well, given that it's almost 8:10, I'm sure they are asleep.